I am unashamed. What about you?
Okay.
So we're about, you know, we're getting close to Christmas Day. And
don't you love this time of year?
I love it.
Ducks, and deer.
It's always, for us, I guess it's different. I mean, everybody has their own Christmas traditions, things they do.
Family. I mean, we had all my family. I mean, our family at my house, which I don't know why we were at my house.
On Thanksgiving?
Yeah, on Thanksgiving.
Well, because Willie and Corey normally host, but then they had the wedding, which so was, you talk about a, I mean.
He was tired. Grief. Willie went to Israel, came back, then had the wedding.
Yeah, 1,000 people at his house.
So that's the first time I saw him. I mean, he looked weathered.
Who's that?
Willie,
your son.
He was rum-dumb the other night. I mean, he was just.
It's a wedding that took 6 months to pull off.
Yeah.
Landscaping, concrete walls, level ground, dirt haulers.
Did you see the 4-foot wall? Where that tent, we were on a 4-foot plateau that he created.
Yeah.
That's incredible.
And Jason,
if he does this with each one of his children,
no.
It'll be like a city.
Well, no, here's what I thought, though, because Sadie is unique. And so I thought to myself, because John Luke's already got married, and that was a big deal, but that was on the show, and I guess they probably helped with that. But
well, it was a big deal.
It was a big deal.
This other.
But I thought to myself, Willie and Corey, probably, I mean, they love all their kids, but nobody but Sadie would ever get what we saw the other day. She's just unique.
Well, that seems weird to say.
But it's true. I mean, I saw that to Bella. I was like, Bella, don't expect to get this. I mean, you know, by the time you come along, by the time you get married.
I've been to a lot of weddings I've never seen. I felt like I was in some kind of Hollywood movie where they transform the actual Earth into a Star Trek. What did they call those things that you go
a hologram.
In? A hologram.
Holodeck.
I think it's a hologram.
Well, no, it was a holodeck was where you go to the deck to see the hologram. But no, I thought the same thing. What I said was, you remember Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe? You know, when they went through the clothing deal there, they went through the thing, and then all of a sudden they're in Narnia. That's the way I felt about that. It felt like a transport. But anyway, all this happened during the Christmas season. And so our Christmases, I think, are always kind of centered around hunting. You know, it's always kind of been that way. It's the only day you take
food,
off.
And food.
Food's a big
deal. Well, you know what? I didn't go Christmas Day when my kids were little. Missy was like, I mean, come on. We don't want to wait for you to get in from hunting. But when they got older, and my two boys now, they're, you know, one's in Nashville, one's at Pepperdine.
One's married.
And Mia's 16. Well, look, if she's not going to school, no, they're all sleeping until noon.
Right.
I don't care Christmas Day, whatever. So it's perfect for me. Now I'm back.
It's kind of come back around.
I go hunting, and I invite them to go.
Yeah.
Of course, they always decline. But if my boys are here, they'll go with me. And it's kind of a new experience.
Yeah, a new tradition.
Know, with that.
So we never really were in that much into, you know, especially when we were younger, Jace, we never were into gifts and all that too much. Dad's not a real holiday shopper.
You know what's crazy?
Is that fair to say, Dad, you're not a holiday shopper?
I don't know if you've ever bought us a gift.
Have you ever bought a Christmas gift?
I can just count on a few hands on when I've shopped.
Yeah.
But most of the time, I have what I want to get, and that was back years ago.
When's the last time you walked into
the
mall?
When's
the last time you walked into the mall here?
Never.
In town?
Never that I remember. I've never been to the mall.
That's quite a statement.
That's a statement.
That's right up there with I don't know what a cell phone is.
Have you ever walked into Hobby Lobby and just, you know, looked around?
Nope, I've never. When we visited the home office,
right,
and they took me into.
They have like a mock store.
They had a mock store, and I looked around, and I said, this is what I see. I told the guy who owned the thing. I said, what was his name?
Green.
Green, I said.
David Green.
I said, Green, I said, I now know how you became a billionaire because I'm looking at all this stuff. I said, a lot of it, it's hanging in my house.
That's right. You recognized it at the house, didn't you?
I said, Miss Kay, I know where she shops. I said, but I've never been in a Hobby Lobby, ever.
That's right.
But it was unusual.
Which he wants us to film an episode.
There was actually nothing in there. And
was there anything in there that you saw that you thought, man, I got to have
Well, it. In jest, I looked over there, and I went into the woman who does all the ribbons, the tape and the ribbons for whatever people want it for. And I just asked him, I said, let me make a guess. I bet you don't have camouflage tape. And he said, got a rack for you. And he went over there and they were looking around and they found the little section.
I saw it. I was with
She handles all tape and ribbons.
So even camo was
camo
there.
Camo was there.
Which is
I've always found it fascinating that the world sells all these products on, and a lot of these companies that are not pro-Jesus, they sell products with the principles that this Bible and people who follow Jesus Christ, that they find, you know, that which is the reason we're following Jesus. I mean, all these benefits and principles. And you start looking, if you start Googling words like forever and eternity, and it's amazing that people, to take your money, they will put like eternity cologne. You know, I think that's Ralph.
Lauren,
yeah. And they're, I mean, when you say that, you're just not thinking they're a spiritual, Christ-centered bedrock, you know. And so I look at that and think.
So this cologne lasts forever.
But it's not. When you die, you're going to stink.
Yeah.
Which.
Well, it won't even make it 2 days, and then you stink anyway.
If they went on that principle, I might could see it. But it doesn't. It's not about that. It's just they take those biblical, spiritual bedrocks. You know, Oprah Winfrey, she sells hope in a jar. That's the name of it, Hope in a jar. You put this cream on your face, and it gives you more than just not looking old. It gives you hope. Give her about $30.
Hope in a jar.
And it works.
Won't wrinkle.
And look, here's the one I found the most fascinating. Charmin, you know, everybody needs toilet paper, right? You'd think they wouldn't have to market that. Well, they came out with their big new deal, and this is what I'm getting inside for Christmas. They came out with Charmin Forever. You say, well, what is it? I saw it. It was on the stock market show that I was watching. They had a roll of toilet paper the size of a wagon wheel. But here's what's funny. The woman said, Charmin has a new product. It's called Charmin Forever. Because I was thinking, yeah.
So it's a giant roll of Charmin toilet paper.
Yeah. You'd never get to the end of it.
Well, but here's what the woman said. This is their new product. I'm watching it. And it says Charmin Forever. And then the next statement, she said, it'll last you about a month. I thought, well, what happened to this forever stuff?
Not as big a role as I thought it was.
Don't you think it's a good gift for Si? Because he has such bouts with diarrhea, which I don't want to get into. But I'm going to tell you, he'll go
or listen
that
to, by
in
the
a
way.
Week, and he'll say, Charmin Forever. Now, look, here's the backstory for that. You know why they named it that? Because guess who their number one competitor is? Angel Soft. Now just think about that.
Oh, Angel Soft.
How in the world did the people at Angel Soft determine the softness of toilet paper in the angelic world? How would they know that? Yeah. How do you know that it's Angel Soft? I thought you didn't even believe in angels, much less God. But you're selling paper that has the softness of angels. So you see that, you're like, well, if this is the celestial beings, what they would use, I got to have that. I just think so it's soft. All a farce. It's all about money, which is really in contrast to what we do. A lot of people think it's all about the gifts, and some people think it's about the gift giver.
That's true.
The one who controls the atoms and the molecules. That's where I'm all for giving gifts, but I'm not going to.
So are you going to get the Forever Charmin for Si?
Well, I am going to get that for Si.
Do you remember that?
Because I want to hear him say, forever? No.
Do you remember that? Do you remember the episode on the show where we were filming at the wellness center and we were working out? We were trying to get Si and Mom to work out. And we went into the pool. Jeff was on that episode. I was on it. We went into the pool area. And there was a sign that says, if you've had diarrhea in the last 7 days, do not get in the pool.
Yep, Si's out.
Well, Si looked at the sign and Si said, boys, I hadn't been a week without diarrhea my whole life. So it was one of the funniest.
People probably think that was set up.
That was real.
Wherever y'all were at, that's in our hometown.
It's at the Wellness Center, West Monroe. So none of us like the thought of losing our hair. It happens to guys. It hadn't happened so much to this particular group of individuals. We seem to have been blessed. I've got a little bald spot coming up in the middle. Lisa says, because I wear caps all the time. She may be right. I do like to wear ball caps. Yours is more open, Dad. Maybe your head needs to breathe.
I'm 73, so you'd think by now it'd either be gone or white. I dyed my beard black so the ducks wouldn't see me.
Yeah.
I dyed this brown. I was standing out in the brush.
So hair loss is really not one of your major issues.
I mean, Willie had a bald spot for years on the side of his head. And you don't remember that?
Hmm.
Yeah, I pulled it out.
I missed that.
Oh, yeah. I mean,
and it just stayed bald?
It just stayed bald for, like, I'd say at least a couple of years. And then it slowly, I mean, he needed, if we'd had this product, it would have been no problem.
Well, see, Willie needed Keeps, which is our friends who have this FDA hair treatment. Basically, they replace the hormone. You lose your hair because of hormone loss.
Really?
Oh, yeah. Well, what? I wonder if it works.
Or your brother would pull your hair out.
Well, that's what I
don't know that fits into the hormone category.
Yeah, you pull it out, it's gone.
Well, I think it'll come back.
Well.
And Willie's did.
At some point.
Yeah.
So.
This may speed the process. What have you got to lose?
So, if you got a brother out there that's pulled your hair out, maybe you need to look into Keeps. I don't know.
You didn't see what I did there?
No, I missed that.
What do you got to lose?
Your hair. But we want to keep our hair. So our friends at Keeps, 90% effective. So here's what you do. You go free online doctor consult, because I want to make sure you do this the right way. You get 50% off your first order. You go to keeps.com/door, D-O-O-R, keeps.com/door. And they're going to be able to save you some money and hopefully get you some hair back, because it's a good deal.
You walk through the door to hair.
There you go. Nothing to lose except hair.
See what I did there?
Keeps.com/door. But I loved it because that was, people asked about the show Ben script. I said, Si was telling the truth. He just saw the sign and we all started laughing because he was like, boys, I had never been a week without diarrhea in my whole life.
Yeah.
Which is funny.
Yeah, I remember one, those TV crew one time asked, we were in a gym and they were filming. And the sign said, shorts must be worn up. And the guy was like, what is this sign on the gymnasium? I was like, well, if you're playing, you know how them,
yeah.
Some people, their shorts, they're seeing their behind, you know what I mean?
It's sagging.
Like, yeah, you can't play ball with the shorts below the equator. I just thought it was a good rule. You know what I mean?
I've seen them walking, guys walking along the street, and they only got one free hand because their other hand is having to hold their pants up on the front because they're so low. If they let go, it's like when you take yours off, Dad. It's just straight to the floor.
Yeah, that's the style. That is a style in our world. People, they wear pants that it's impossible for them to stay up, and it's the style.
So you're one handed. You know, you're
well, or you just say the heck with it. But why not just why even put them on?
Yeah, or why not just cinch it down?
It's they're sending a message there. I'm gonna wear
something.
I'm not
sure what it is
that won't stay up.
The message is I have to hold these pants up.
Yeah, but Phil, there's a lot of people doing it. It's a style.
But duck hunting, that'd be difficult because you wouldn't have one hand to shoot with. Your duck call, you're blowing your duck call, and you hold your pants up with other. It's just not wise.
Your pants.
I don't have enough hands to keep my pants up.
To figure out why they're doing it. I can't really figure it out. You may know, but.
Are you?
Hey, it's a wacky world out there now.
So anyway, are we answering questions today?
Yeah, we are. So anyway, Merry Christmas to everyone, and we hope you have a great Christmas season. We Robertson tradition, I guess it's because we have such a big Thanksgiving with dressing and ducks and fried turkeys and, you know, kind of traditional foods, that we kind of all decided on the Robertson Christmas feast is always seafood. Dad usually fries shrimp, or Jay's now. We do, you know, crab and crawfish balls, which are delicious, you know, stuffed crawfish balls.
Oh, we eat bone-in ribeyes.
Bone-in ribeyes. I mean,
a lot of people get stuck on this one meal, which we'll fry a couple turkeys for Thanksgiving. They're good. Gimmer does a good job. That's my cousin. But, you know, if you're going to eat, why not eat the best of the best?
That's right. Well, and that's one of the things that's obviously we can do. But, you know, looking back when Granny and Pa were alive, we did traditional same meal again. Remember, we ate it all of this all right. before. This
well, when has been we were kind of kids, a, you just ate whatever fish you caught. And
well, and hope, just hope had a for different the best.
Prayer.
Said, that's exactly right.
Thank you, Lord.
Or the giant fruit cakes.
But do you remember every year Kay would say that we were so poor that we couldn't have any Christmas gifts? You
oh,
remember
yeah.
that?
Oh, yeah.
She did the same thing every year, and it, some, for some weird reason, it worked.
Then when you got something, you were
thrilled. Well, you would always get something, but you always thought
But I would say this back, and I don't know if you remember this or not, Jace, but Dad, even before Dad was a Christian, the one thing I always remembered as a little boy was that he still valued Christmas itself. And so when I was really, really young, you wouldn't remember because you were about 3 years old, but Dad would take us to the movie on Christmas Eve.
Oh, I remember that.
You remember that?
Look.
And that happened all through the early 70s.
It really did. You know what was funny? Is it wouldn't matter what the movie was rated.
No, no.
Look, we were watching. I remember one Christmas movie we watched, and we were the only people in the
theater. Oh, yeah, nobody. Who else goes to a movie on Christmas
Eve? It was Death Wish.
With Charles Bronson.
And look, I remember it because about 10 times during the movie, I would get head slapped, and it would be Kay's. Look, she would put her hand over my eyes, not because of what was seen, but what she thought was fixing to happen. And look, then she would try to get over and cover my ears. You know, I'm like, why am I here? Because this is, you're assaulting me during the movie.
And this is way before Disney movies that were, you know,
Every time. Well, it was whatever out. Phil wanted to go watch.
Well, right.
Which was
Charles Bronson.
Shoot them up.
Clint Eastwood. I do remember seeing Big Jake. On a Christmas Eve night, which I was a big John Wayne
fan. That was a good tradition.
It was a great tradition.
Yeah. So you didn't even know you were tradition. Do you remember that?
Nah.
How do you forget that?
But we never forgot it. I guess what stood out to me was Dad was gone a lot. You know, you're young, life goes on. But it was the one time I felt like you committed to us, like, let's go all
yeah,
go do this
would.
As a family,
you know,
which
look,
was a big
that
deal.
Maybe it was a dollar. Remember that East Gates? $1 ahead. And now you go there. Let me tell you something. A dollar is going to get you. They're going to call 911 and get a cop to escort you out. It's $100 for popcorn, a drink, and two movie tickets.
Oh, exactly. If you go to the regular one. So anyway. Yeah, we got. So I wanted to we got some questions in today I want to look at. And last time we answered some questions. Dad jammed one in at the end, but I want to go back to that because this was a great question that I thought. And so this is somebody from your Instagram, Jace, didn't have a name.
Oh, I remember that.
So they left this comment. So here's what they said. They said, basically, if you're around a brother, around a Christian, and they're openly living not what Christ wants them to live.
Yeah.
So he said you had quoted a text at some point about that you have to get away from people that, you know, are living a lifestyle away from God. So he just said, I'm confused. Do we stay and help them? Do we get away from them? But
that's a good question.
It brings up that line that we all have about someone who is obviously not living the faith. And what do we do about that?
Well,
do you stay or do you flee?
Hi, it's Jason Whitlock. Have you secured your spot for Roll Call 2.0, my annual men's summit in Nashville, Tennessee? Are you looking for an opportunity to fellowship with other believers, to come together across the identity lines the left have drawn to divide us? Join me, country music star John Rich, and Blaze founder Glenn Beck in Nashville on Saturday, June 1st for Roll Call 2.0. We're going to listen to great music, eat fantastic barbecue, and hear inspiring speeches from myself, Glenn Beck, North Carolina Lieutenant Governor Mark Robinson, Pastor E.W. Jackson, and many more. Let's quit letting the satanic left sift us like wheat. Let's come together as men and talk about the sacrifices we must make to restore the unity and shared values that made our country the envy of the world. Visit FearlessArmyRollCall.com to secure your spot.
I give them the text because you got to remember, I'm not going to sit somewhere and argue with you about biblical text. I just read the text and you make up your own mind. The question was exactly what, Al? It was
basically when do you stay?
When do you
and
stay?
When do you flee? In other words, can you help somebody out of a bad situation, Or do you just say, you know what, I'm writing this off
and
I'm getting away
from it? Before you read your verse, you got to preface this with God's grace can change anybody at any moment.
That's right.
At any time. And there have been people who have, you know, came to Christ and then lived like the devil and then eventually came back. I mean, God
converted,
saying, you know,
I've converted many, many, many that, you know, some of them I would say, in fact, this may help the person who asked the question. I've had conversations with people, and if they start to argue or get loud, I'll just say, hey, easy now, easy. Just think about it. I just give them the verses, and my admonition is always, just think about it. Don't get hostile here. I've had, I'm telling you, so many that I can't count them. Some have come back 40 years later, and they say, you remember me? Well, when I was talking with them 40 years earlier, they were 19. Well, now they're 60. They said, you remember me? And then I'm like,
no. Well,
I said, sometimes I'll say something like, your face kind of looks familiar. I can't.
Which he means said, when
I was a nice way to say
that. They will say, when I was 19, this story is the same over and over and over. I was 19, and you shared Jesus with me, told me about Jesus, and I got a little mad and huffy about it because, you know, all of a sudden, you know, you're doing. It said, but all you told me was to think about it. Well, I have. So I'm just telling you, now I'm ready. And I had no way of remembering the conversation or the individual. And so many that goes out the roof. But the question was, when do you say, I'm running with the wrong bunch here. I need to back away from this particular group of people. Just remember this, Paul to the Corinthians. The context here is the gospel and some people saying there was no resurrection. There's really not going to be. I mean, resurrection from the dead. Some are arguing about it. And he lines them out on that. Gets over toward the back, 1 Corinthians 15:33, and he makes a very true comment. So you'll understand, is there a time when you say, I need to back away from this person or this group of individuals I've been running with? Do not be misled. Bad company corrupts good character. Now, if you take that at face value, say bad company corrupts good character. You say, are these individuals that I'm running with, I don't want to be come across like I don't want anything to do with them. Just remember, if bad company corrupts good character, don't spend an inordinate amount of time running with bad company. Come back to your senses as you ought and stop sinning. For there are some who are ignorant of God. I say this to your shame because these people were running with individuals who were telling them there's no resurrection. You can't believe everything, blah, 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 blah. And there it goes. That's one. That's 1 Corinthians 15:33, which is a good one.
Well, can I jump in and then you
sure.
go after me? Because you read 1 Corinthians 15.
Yeah, I got about five.
I think
five.
These people get this from 1 Corinthians 5. Because there was a situation at the Church of Corinth. Paul, full of the Holy Spirit, wrote him a letter.
That was the second one I was going to mention. Go for it.
All right. Well, they had sexual immorality going on.
Yep.
And evidently they were saying it's not wrong. So Paul says an interesting thing in verse 9. He says, 1 Corinthians 5:9, I have written you in my letters not to associate with sexually immoral people. Then he clarifies. Not at all meaning the people of this world who are immoral.
We constantly run up on them.
Right, or the greedy and swindlers or idolaters. In that case, you'd have to leave the world, which some people in religion, that's what they do. They're like, dig a hole, make you a cave, and stay there because everybody's evil. But he's like, nope. But now I am writing you that you must not associate with anyone who calls himself a brother, but who is sexually immoral, greedy, idolater, slander, a drunkard, or a swindler. With such a man, don't even eat. Then this is a profound verse, verse 12 and 13. What business is it of mine to judge those outside the church? And there's a question mark. So it infers an answer, which would be what? What business is it on mine to judge those?
You don't have any business.
It's none of your business doing that.
Right. That's
There's
right.
one judge. It's God.
That's right.
And most people in the world don't realize.
They're sinful people, and yeah. God will judge them, not you.
And then most people don't realize this next verse. It says, God will judge those outside. Expel. Oh, I skipped the part. Then it says, are you not to judge those inside? Well, what's the answer? What's the understood answer?
Of yes. course.
Of course. You've got a person saying, I love Jesus. He's number one in my life. But he's out there living in a way that's obvious. Because, you know, I bring up that Galatians 5:19. It says it's a list of sins, but the first phrase is really important. It says the acts of the sinful nature are obvious.
Right.
It is always obvious when you're doing something that is in direct opposition to God.
Yep.
So you are supposed to go to that person and say, hey, I understand, you know, you're in this sexual relationship. Now, you're doing this brother to brother. You're not doing this to somebody in the world. It's none of your business. There, you preach Jesus to them. Say, yep. Here's Jesus. He'll change the heart. But then they say, oh, no, it's fine. Me and God got something worked out. No, we've got a problem. He's claiming to live and represent God through Jesus and the Holy Spirit, but he's not.
So why are you there?
It says to say, no, I'm not.
Why are you
on.
There? The Apostle John, 1 John 3, verse 10. This is how we know who the children of God are and who the children of the devil are. You say, he's fixed to tell you how you can know who they belong to. Anyone who does not do what is right is not a child of God, neither is anyone who does not love his brother. You say, if you're around people, and as a pattern, day after day after day.
It's obvious.
You say, if filth is coming out of their mouth, I don't know how many I can tell you about that have walked up on me. I'm building duck calls way back, and I'd stop my machines. I'd sit down with them and start into a Bible conversation. They came from somewhere to see me. So we're sitting there talking, and the cursing was coming out of their mouth. As soon as they found out, when I started talking about Jesus coming in flesh, dying on the cross for you, dude, and was buried and raised, as soon as they start hearing that, time after time after time, guess what left about this fast? All the cursing stopped. They said, uh-oh, done run up on the wrong one. At first, they just thought I was some guy out there down here on the river building a duck call with long whiskers. But once I went spiritual with them and started pointing them to Jesus, all their cursing dried up, which told me that they can stop doing it. Yeah. That's a couple of things.
Yeah, but I think that's the line that this person is talking about, is the line in being an influencer, which is what you describe, a biblical influencer. In other words, you know, they came to you, they're talking, they don't know who you are yet, but then you decide, I'm going to influence them for Christ. Now, they have to make a decision then whether they're going to be like, I don't get away from that guy, he's crazy, religious nut, or I want to hear more.
Yep.
Versus being influenced by whatever's going on in your life. You described as running with people. So that's I'm at work, filthy language is going on, I don't say anything, or I participate, or that's the line we're talking about here.
That
am I
correct.
An influencer, or am I being influenced by
that
the
is
culture?
Correct.
But I think a key factor for the question is how you respond to it. If somebody came to me and said, hey, you know, if I'm in obvious immoral conduct, and they said, Jesus wouldn't approve of that. Most people, if they love Jesus, would say, you're right. I was wrong. Well, look, God forgives you. And some people go public. That's what the response is all about. I love it. Our church people, they go down and that whatever it is, they'll spell it out in graphic detail.
And I've done it myself.
And
you know,
they don't start throwing rocks. They say, we love you. We forgive. It's how you respond. Look, I when I was about in my early 20s, we were studying with a lot of people back then because most people that age are more open to Jesus. You know, the older you get, the less people are open to it. Well, there was a girl who we had brought to the Lord about a year before that. Her name kept coming up in the Bible studies that we were having. Because these people I was dealing with, they were running the bars, and that, you know, we're talking about drugs, alcohol abuse, and, you know, they were sleeping with somebody different every other night, and Well, they kept saying, they said, well, one of the girls that y'all baptized, I saw her at the bar the other night. Well, I didn't make a big deal of it because I'm like, well, what's that got to do with you? You know, I'm sharing Jesus. But when I saw that girl, I said, look, I've gotten some reports. Now, I didn't go investigate. I'm not a policeman. I'm just studying with lost people, and they keep bringing your name up, saying they're seeing you at the bars. And she was like, wasn't me. Well, about a week later, I'm studying with somebody else, same girl. I just saw that girl, you know, at the bar the other night. So I told Missy one night, I think it was New Year's Eve, I said, you know, that's bothering me that people keep saying that, and she keeps denying it. And I was thinking about that 1 Corinthians 5. We didn't have a lot going on. I was like, because they kept saying the specific bar. I said, let's go drive that bar and just sit out in the parking lot and see if we see her. Granted, it's not something I would do now, but so look, we go over there. Of course, it was packed. I was sitting there maybe 2 minutes, and guess who comes stumbling out? The girl and one of the girls we had studied with in the past week. I thought, you have got to be kidding me. I opened the door, and Missy's like, where are you going? I said, oh, I'm going to go talk to her. So I said, I wasn't going to go in there, but I'll talk to her. And so when I walked up to her, look, when she looked at me, that her face fell. I mean, just like, oh, crap. And I thought, well, I guess I know now. And I really wasn't, you know, I loved her, and it was disappointing, but we had a situation. So, look, I get back home. She calls me and cusses me out. How dare you judge me, you know, come up there and, you know, looking for me. And, well, to make a long story short, the next week, guess where she was at? The church building, front row. Walking down front row, her head buried on my shoulder saying, I'm sorry. And, look, that was 30 years ago, and she still to this day. Oh, yeah, she meets, and now it's been bumpy.
It's a struggle.
But it wasn't really about judging. It was about responding. We have an accusation here that you are obviously not living for Jesus. But when we confronted her, she denied it. Now, if she hadn't have come around, well, we would have had to make a decision. And when people would have asked about her, I'd have said, you know what? We don't run with her. Because she is living the opposite of what she says.
So let me contrast that with another story. This is our younger brother, Jep. So Jep had a period of time where he was in the world. He was still at church or connected to the church, but he obviously wasn't living as a Christian. So he goes into a bar. Just to show you the difference, Jason, your purpose for going into that bar versus Jep. So Jep goes in with Zach and some of his buddies. When he goes in, he sees some other people from church.
Yeah, which is what happens.
You know, he looks around, there's like four or five other guys from church. One of them is a young guy that we've been working with our whole life. He's still around. But he looked, when Jep walked up, and the reason I remember this is Jep said this had a huge impact on him later. He looked at Jep and he said, man, we're so glad you're here. We need you here. Well, what when Jep said at first, he didn't know what he meant. But later he realized what that meant. He was your son. He was my brother. I was preaching for the church at the time. Jace was one of our leaders. Willie was one of the, he was the college age leader. All these leaders at the church, here was our younger brother, and he looked at him and said, we need you here. Jep knew what that meant. That means we need you here for cover, because that means we're okay being here if you're here. But Jep said that didn't leave him. I mean, it bothered him because he got to thinking, wait a minute, is this what I'm doing?
I'm
on the wrong team. So when he came to repentance, he went back to that guy. You know, he told me this later. And he said, you don't need to be going in places like that, and neither do I.
Yep.
It convicted him. So the reason I bring up the story is it shows you the two things. I mean, Jeb was in there for a completely different reason. He was a part of the group there, and one of them even acknowledged that and said, you're providing cover for us. You know, you're a church, you're the son of a church leader. So I think that shows you the line I'm talking about by being an influencer, being influenced, you know, and being changed by it. You don't want to be in the crowd of people who don't care about Jesus.
At the same time, we've worked for so many, we're to be patient with them. And but all scriptures God breathed, it's useful for teaching, rebuking, correcting, and training in righteousness, so that the man of God be, or woman, be thoroughly equipped.
2 Timothy 3:16-17.
So we take the scriptures and we're trying to, we use them to teach people
and we're patient with them. When they fall, we say, get back up. Let's go. You're covered. You're under the grace of God. You can make it. Let's go. So, and it's just an ongoing thing. And some of them, it's a continual effort for 30, 40 years. Some it's for 2 or 3 weeks and a month or 2 months or 1 year or 5 years. It's different times. But now if you just, what you say, well, what about doctrinal positions that people hold? And then you bring up Jesus and they're into Hinduism, Buddhism, Islam, and all that. Well, you got a reading over in 2 John. This is John the Apostle. Second John's a little book, 1st, 2nd, 3rd John, open your Bible. Then there's Jude, then Revelation. So look it up. Here's John the Apostle. Many deceivers, this is written in the first century, mid-first century. Many deceivers who do not acknowledge Jesus Christ as coming in the flesh have gone out into the world. We have a position there. We run upon a group of individuals who say, God didn't become a human. God didn't become, are you crazy? I mean, how could that have? And they're arguing with you about it. Any such person is the deceiver and the antichrist. Watch out that you do not lose what you have worked for. You say, watch out that you don't lose what you've worked for. We got a person saying, Jesus didn't come in flesh, and you've run up on him, he or others. But that you may be rewarded fully. Anyone who runs ahead and does not continue in the teaching of Christ, beginning with he was God in flesh, does not have God. Whoever continues in the teaching has both the Father and the Son. Don't mess with the teaching that God became flesh and his name is Jesus. If anyone comes to you and does not bring this teaching that Jesus was God in flesh, do not take him into your house or welcome him. Anyone who welcomes him shares in his wicked work. Now, I'm just reading the people that's asked the questions. I'm just reading them an answer to you say, when do you say, what do you think about Jesus? And they're like, I don't believe it. He didn't come down in flesh. Well, you say, look, I would say, just think about that. Might ought to check into the Bible and you read about him, you'll figure it out. And then I'm on down the road. But I'm not inviting him to my house.
Well,
and all
I think
that.
It's no. saying right. You don't approve. You're not approving of that. I mean, it doesn't mean you don't love them. Doesn't mean you don't help them. Doesn't mean you won't give them a meal. But you're drawing the line of distinction. I mean, that's at some point when you have a Bible study, all these people, even including us, were in that camp.
That's right.
So you have a purpose, but he's more, it's like you're not having them in your home saying, oh, it doesn't matter. That's fine. Because you're then giving approval. Ephesians 5 says don't be partners with them. Well, there's a difference. And saying, yep, this is, so you find creative ways.
Because you got to remember, Jesus. We live in an era on the spiritual side, supposedly. I call it the era of Oprah, because it's probably been about 30 years going on now, where the philosophy is all roads lead to salvation. In other words, if everybody just has their own conviction, their own truth, at the end of the day,
their own truth and their own God.
Up our culture.
And we're all going to be fine. That's right. No problem. And then we come along and say, wait a minute. Jesus said there's only one path to salvation, and it's through me. And so that's why we point people to him. So I think that's our purpose. So But
on the other side of that, Al, there are religious people who take what Phil just read, and they become mean.
Yeah.
Somewhere or another, they lost all the passages about loving, everybody, loving your neighbor. That's a good one. Because they're like, oh, well, that guy don't believe in Jesus, so I'm burning the bridge. Right here. Well, there has to be room for God's grace or none of us would ever be converted. And to me, that's what gives religion a bad name, because they take one little verse and they detach it from the rest of everything else. And they're just like, no. And that eventually they're living in
pain. We debated with the Islamist. It's been years ago. Who was a brother over Jackson Street? Daluki. Daluki debated him, and they said, Jesus was not God in flesh. Jesus did not die on a cross for the sins of the world. Jesus was not buried and raised from the dead. And Jesus didn't return to heaven, is seated at the God's right hand. They took the scriptures and said, nope, none of that happened. Then they talk about Muhammad. So the debate lasted about 2 hours. And you say, did you win anybody out of that? Did you win it over any of the Islamists? Not a one. They gave their argument for Islam. We gave our argument for Jesus, and we went on down the road. I didn't love them any less. We just had a discussion, and we would give them the scriptures. They would have the Quran, and they would give their scriptures about Muhammad, and we would give ours about Jesus. So we had basically a free-for-all.
So you'd say debates weren't that effective in trying to reach
them. They were not effective at all.
I mean, I'm always interested in them, but it just doesn't seem...
Right.
Parable of the sower, four kinds of people hear the gospel of Jesus. He becoming flesh, dying on the cross, being buried, the message, the planting the seed. You know, farmer sows it. Some don't get it, don't understand it. The evil one snatches away what was sown in their heart. The second kind embrace it, but they quickly fall away because of the world, the temptations or whatever, or persecution. They're in, you look around, they're gone. The third kind, that's two out of two, they're out. And the third kind, according to Jesus, are the ones that the seed was planted in the thorns. They don't mature and grow up. So he's already told us some just don't make the cut. Right. Well, that's three out of three. Parable of the sower, everybody can read it. And the fourth one, though, with a good and honest heart, when the seed is planted, they produce a crop, some 30, 60, 100 times what was sown. So one out of four, not good odds. But that was Jesus talking, not me. So you can read the parable of the sower. Here's another one about the last days. We've been in them since Jesus came. That's Hebrews 1, if you want to read it. First three or four verses in Hebrews 1. But this is over in 2 Timothy 3. Here's another one. Mark this. There will be terrible times in the last days. So here's what you have. People will be lovers of themselves, lovers of money. They'll be boastful, proud, abusive, disobedient to their parents, ungrateful, unholy, without love, unforgiving, slanderous, without self-control, brutal, not lovers of the good, treacherous, rash, conceited, lovers of pleasure rather than lovers of God. You could stop there and say, good night, Phil. That's half of America or more. I'm just giving you the text that was written in about the mid-first century. They have a form of godliness, but denying its power. Then there's this little statement, not mine. This is what the Apostle Paul told Timothy, an apostle writing to a preacher. Have nothing to do with them. They're the kind... who worm their way into homes and gain control over weak-willed women. They're loaded down with sins and they're swayed by all kinds of evil desires, always learning, but never able to acknowledge the truth. So you read those texts like that because the question was, they don't go to church. How do you know when to say, you know?
Safely.
Well, it's like when you read that verse, what popped into my head, Missy's grandma, one of her grandmas who's since died, she had a guy she met at church. He was a little younger than she was. I mean, she was up there. She was in her high 80s. Well, all of a sudden, he meets her at church, not around here, but, you know, living way off. And... befriends her and starts helping her and taking her to the doctor and just listening to her stories. And, well, you know, I was a little dubious of that because I was like, well, why would somebody do that, you know? But he was such a great help to her that most of, you know, her family was like, well, this is awesome, you know. That,
it's taking time.
Well, because it was helping them because she needed some help. You either put her in her home or here God, you know, it seemed like God sent this guy. Well, after a couple of years of this, they look up, you know, one night, he's gone, stole everything she got, figured out a way to get her to sign over all her, the money she had in the bank. And I just thought about that. He was at church every Sunday. He carried around, acted like a servant. I think when you read those passages, these are the types of people that it's referring to, because you really wouldn't have known it. It was so perfect. His speech was so good. He knew the Bible. He was there. He was singing.
Yep.
He was helping.
Yep.
But he was in a setting where it was all a big hustle.
Yeah.
Well, that guy's going to be hard to reach.
Yep.
This is not the guy you need to be running with.
Here's the way I've arranged my schedule to answer the woman's question, or the man who said, who do you run with? Who do you not run with? When do you say, how could you say you God so loved the world if he loves everybody? Y'all supposed to love everybody. I do. But just think about this. Here's my current lifestyle. You say, are you in company with a lot of people in the world who are full of sins all the time? But when I'm in their company, I have this Bible in front of me, and they're seated right there, and I've got the floor. They can tell their story as much as they want to. They can get up and leave when they want to. They can say, I don't want to hear any of this. I ask them to sit down. Miss Kay will line somebody up. They'll come down every week. The ungodly come. When I go out to speak, I'm speaking. There's a big audience. You say, well, is anybody out there, is any of you guilty of sin? Sometimes they all raise their hand. Anybody in here has never sinned, made a mistake in their life? Most of the time, their hands are down. I'm speaking to godly and ungodly. They're in groups. So I just deliver it, tell them that God loves them, I love them, and here's the message, and I'm on down the road.
Because you can't see the heart,
But every day, I'm letting God save them. Yeah. I can't save them. I'm just giving the message. I preach the gospel on down the road. Now, day to day, you say, do you run with the ungodly? No. They may come down 2 or 3 day period, visit something, we line up something, and I'm around them 2 or 3 days, preach the gospel to them, and they're on about their way. Some are converted, some are not. But the people in my inner circle is Miss Kay, y'all's mother, y'all, the cameramen here who are good, godly guys. You say, do you run with the ungodly?
No, you got that down.
At any time.
And but it helps when you live at the end of civilization as we know it.
Well, I didn't just stagger down here.
Yeah.
I came down here on purpose.
People don't drive by your house. You know why? Because if they do, they run in the river.
Yeah.
I deal with the ungodly. If they know me, they'll watch their mouth around me. If they don't know me, they'll start cursing, and I'll figure out a way to start telling them about Jesus to see if I can convert them so the filth will dry up, or they're talking about women and their profanities coming out of them. You see what I'm saying?
So I were succinctly pulling this together to close this out, it would be that when Jason and I were in school, they taught us there was a phrase they used. It was context is king. And so when you're studying the Bible, you understand the context of what's being written. I think when we live our lives, context is king. Dad moved down here on the river originally to get away from his old drinking buddies.
That is
and the
correct.
People he used to run with.
I withdrew from him.
He withdrew from him. But over the last 45 plus years, it's amazing how many people come down
thousands.
Here. Thousands have come here to be influenced and impacted by the gospel.
That is correct.
So there is a time to flee, and there is a time to impact and share Jesus, which is all the time. So hopefully that helped you. Whoever you are, thank you for the question and all the other questions. We got some really good ones that we want to deal with. I love it. Keep sending them. Keep replying on wherever you watch the podcast, because we're getting them, and we're working them into the slot to talk about them. It's a great way to discuss the Bible. So thank you for tuning in to Unashamed. Merry Christmas, and we'll see you next time. We are so glad you're watching and listening to the Unashamed podcast. Be sure to like us on Facebook, subscribe on YouTube and iTunes. That's going to keep you up to date with all the new episodes, and it's also going to let other people find out about our podcast. So keep spreading the word and watching and listening to Unashamed with Phil Robertson.